You are listening to the Gold and Blue Nation podcast. It's another baseball edition of the podcast, and we are coming to you from Kendrick Family Ballpark, Wagoner Field, as West Virginia takes down the 17th-ranked UCF Knights Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, a historic sweep for West Virginia. Ryan Decker and Kevin Redfern here to break down this sweep for you, as West Virginia is really, over the last couple of days and weeks, become a red-hot team, Kevin. Now, West Virginia has won seven straight Big 12 conference games, tying the best streak in program history since moving to the Big 12. This team playing really well at a really important time, I think, in the schedule and in this season.
And don't look now, but at least from my opinion, and a lot of people might agree, but the hardest stretch of West Virginia's both season and conference season is probably over. Now, I know last week you and I both talked about how that TCU series at the end of the regular season is a daunting one. But UCF is the highest RPI team in the conference, or at least they entered the weekend that way. Really looked like they were going to be kind of that newcomer that was going to do some damage, and the Mountaineers just took care of them in three games. I mean, they were three hard-fought games, but no team positioned better than West Virginia right now in the Big 12, and just a team that I don't think a lot of people want to face right now.
As we record this early Sunday evening at 6:07 right now, as I bring you this sentence, Oklahoma is knotted up with Kansas State in Norman. That's a 7-7 ball game right now in Norman, and that is big. It's important to bring that up this early, because if the Wildcats can win a game on the road, likely in extras, that would have to happen. Oklahoma would drop one game behind West Virginia in the Big 12 standings, and that would give WVU its lone spot, or really just an entire grasp on the top spot in the Big 12 conference standings. But let's backtrack here a little bit. Let's talk about all three of these games, Kevin. All three very interesting against WVU, or between WVU and UCF, I should say. UCF, as you mentioned, coming in really the biggest bullseye on West Virginia's schedule right now were these Knights, because they had a top six, top seven RPI coming in, number 17 in the country. And West Virginia, coming off a rough-looking loss on Wednesday in the midweek against Marshall, did not look like a team that was phased at all, even despite a 95-minute rain delay and an ace earlier in the season, Aiden Major, once again not having his best stuff early on against UCF Friday night.
Yeah, and I'm looking now to confirm this, but I'm pretty sure the Mountaineers trailed in each game two of this series against UCF. So not only overcoming some adversity coming into the series, but at each step of the three-gamer this weekend out here in Granville. I mean, overall, you've got a game starting on Friday, the opener, just a hard-fought game in terms of, you know, starting pitching was good on both sides for a bit. Both teams brought out the long ball at crucial points. And then some defensive hiccups from UCF, particularly one in the ninth, in the seventh inning, was ultimately the difference depending on how you slice it. So a well-fought baseball game on Friday, and that kind of set the tone for West Virginia and how they were going to be able to battle back against a tough UCF team.
Yeah, it was technically an error on the first baseman of UCF that allows that game-winning run to cross home plate Friday night, a 7-6 victory for the Mountaineers. Kyle West was big in that one. He homered in the fifth inning, then tripled to center field in the seventh to tie the game up. Kyle West, a West Virginia kid, we've talked about him on this podcast before. Obviously, he's been a central portion of this West Virginia lineup at times this season. He's really hitting the ball well and seeing the ball well right now. He was hitting entering today and then through today as well. He's hitting over 300 in the last eight games now. He's got five of his seven home runs on the year over that stretch as well. Also has a couple extra base hits. And then, not to go too far in advance here, but today, you fast forward to the ninth inning, he draws one of the most crucial walks of the season to date to allow then Grant Hussey to draw a big walk as well to tie the game with the bases loaded on Sunday. Huge at-bats, huge plate appearances by Kyle West here late. It's good to see him get going, especially as now this West Virginia team, with the addition of J.J. Weatherholt, Logan Sabe getting back into it, some other guys starting to heat up, all things pointing in the right direction for WVU, and Kyle West has been at the middle of that.
Ryan Decker's preseason newcomer of the year, Kyle West, that is.
I forgot about that, to be honest with you.
Even his 0-for-4 on Saturday had a couple of loud outs, too. That kind of was more of a 0-for on the stat sheet than it was in reality. But, yeah, both Kyle West and David Hageman, I think, on Friday, too, were the heroes. Hageman coming and closing the door out of the bullpen. But even on West's triple, I mean, a bad read from the center fielder, I think it was Williamson from UCF, goes down as a hit, more of a mental error. So that kind of shows the impact of how that the defense had a role in Friday's game. But Kyle West, yeah, I mean, seeing the ball well, even his outs are loud.
West Virginia has been really consistent. If there's one thing that's been consistent about WVU this season, it's they've been good almost every weekend at taking that first game of a series. Really, the no-hitter against Oklahoma, I believe, is the only series opener this year that West Virginia has dropped. That's been a huge advantage for WVU of getting off to these good starts on the weekends and then rolling that momentum throughout the weekend, and that's exactly what they did on Saturday. So the Mountaineers entering Saturday with a chance to take a series victory against a nationally ranked opponent in number 17 at UCF. And hey, wouldn't you know it, Derek Clark went 9 innings, Kevin. Don't know if you've heard that he's kind of been doing that recently. He went 9 innings once again.
Saturday, Groundhog Day for West Virginia. I asked Randy Mazey after the game yesterday if the bullpen pitchers can just start wearing street clothes on Saturday, and he seemed to like that one. And seems to be the case. And a narrative that we have both talked about, I think, on this podcast and with Randy on Sundays a couple of times this year, is how much of a benefit Derek Clark going 9 innings on Saturday gives you on Sunday when you really need to scrape the depths of the bullpen. But yeah, back to Saturday, Clark phenomenal. Even though it wasn't, you know, his dominant, you know, type of outing that he had the last couple of weeks, he did face some adversity early, but continued to get better as he went on. Safe to say he's the best pitcher in the Big 12 right now.
Yeah, it really does seem that way. He's got an ERA of 2.15 right now, Derek Clark does, and that's after allowing 4 earned runs on Saturday. Clark started off the game really well, 26 pitches through 2 innings, then had a 26-pitch third inning as UCF gets to him a little bit for 2 runs. They score again in the 4th inning to keep the lead extended there. But West Virginia just started chipping away. They score 2 runs, the Mountaineers do, in the 5th and 6th. Also scored 1 in the 7th. That was part of 5 consecutive innings that West Virginia scored in, and there was a big hit during that stretch as well, but sticking with Clark here. And then Clark just, you could tell, he settled in after the 4th inning. Ends the day with 10 strikeouts. Only 9 batters reached base against Derek Clark. 10 strikeouts, 9 batters reach base, only 6 via a hit. He was really, really good once again. You talk about, you mentioned he's the best pitcher in the Big 12. Certainly, it seems like even for a guy who missed some time at the start of this year due to an injury, he almost has to be the front runner for Big 12 Pitcher of the Year at this point. Again, it's April 14th. We've got a month plus left in this regular season, but Derek Clark making a name for himself, a former D2 guy.
I think it says something that when you pitch a 9-inning complete game shutout and get the win and your stats go up, his ERA increased, his whip increased, that's probably, I mean, not the best sign in the world, but that's probably a good indication that you're having a pretty darn good season.
So while Derek Clark is pitching a complete game, once again, his third of the season on Saturday, something big happened, and that was for the first time this season, J.J. Weatherholt goes yard. He does so in the 5th inning. It was a solo shot, which was then followed a few batters later by a Reed Chumley home run. His, at that point, 9th of the season to once again have the team lead in that category. But J.J. Weatherholt gets going on Saturday. He does carry that momentum then into Sunday. We'll get to that in a second. But what do you think a relief that was? And we talked to J.J. after the game, but getting that first one on the tally there on Saturday, that had to have been a huge relief for J.J., whether or not he kind of wants to admit that, just to get one on and see the ball go out of the ballpark again.
Yeah, J.J. really struggled in Huntington at Marshall. I believe he didn't have a hit in that game. And then if he did, it was a weak one. But and then on Friday, he goes 1-for-4 in the leadoff spot. And his hit came in the first inning, and that one was even questionable whether it was a hit or an error. So he walked into Saturday's game borderline mini slumping a little bit.
For JJ.
Yeah. For JJ Weatherholt purposes, but then he kind of put all that conversation to rest both during the game and after the game when he spoke with the media. I think it's pretty obvious. Everyone agrees when JJ Weatherholt's at his best, he's driving the ball to the opposite field and he's working gap to gap. So when he homers over the left center field fence on Saturday, it's a pretty good indication things are going well. But he said he was thinking about it, wasn't too worried about it, and nor as you should be with a player of that caliber. But now you don't have to think about it at all once you see it go over the wall, and that seemed to be somewhat of a reliever or a relief for Weatherholt.
Something of note here with JJ specifically is that he gets hit by a pitch in all three games of this series. On Friday night, he gets hit by a pitch in the leg, a similar spot to what he'd been dealing with that kept him out for a large portion of the season, 24 games. He stayed in the game. Correct? Or did he come out?
No, he stayed in.
He stayed in on Friday despite being hobbled, and that was something that was obvious.
Didn't look good, but he stayed in.
So he stays in a DH role there. Then on Saturday, he gets hit again, and again stays in, is able to hit a home run later in the game. And then you fast forward to Sunday, he gets hit by a pitch again late in the game. You could tell how frustrated that made him, that not only are pitchers pitching around him and being very selective in how they are approaching him, a pitch gets away from a pitcher on a third consecutive day. He gets a free pass, and that one, he actually ends up coming out of the game for a pinch runner in that situation, but stays in the ballgame at his designated hitter role. Just kind of the inner workings of college baseball there, that you're allowed to do that. But I don't know. I wonder if that's frustrating a little bit. Not only are you not getting a ton of pitches to hit if you're JJ, but you're also then being hit by a pitch. Obviously, you want to get on, but not even getting a chance in some respects.
Yeah, and JJ also had a pair of walks on Sunday today before he got hit by a pitch. And a lot of those, he had a couple of at-bats, both in the ninth and in extras, to really like do some damage, potentially win a game. And you know he wants that. So I think his aggravation more comes with not being able to win the game himself or his team than it is with the actual anger of getting hit by a pitch. But I mean that's just something that he's gonna have to deal with. I mean he's not gonna see a ton of pitches to hit this year. As he continues to get his average to rise, he's gonna see fewer of them, and getting on base is priority number one for JJ Weatherholt.
So WVU behind JJ Weatherholt's home run and Derek Clark's complete game wins the series on Saturday, 7-5, the final score there. Derek Clark improving to 4-0 on the year, his win-loss record on the mound. So then that takes you to Sunday. West Virginia coming into the day on Sunday had won six consecutive Big 12 games dating back two series ago. West Virginia also at stake in that game, the Sunday series finale, had never swept a nationally ranked team according to the coaches poll. Now that's a key figure there. The full poll and opponent ranked opponent history not available for the other various polls that have been woven in and out of college baseball's history. But as far as the coaches poll, which dates back to 1992, West Virginia had never swept a nationally ranked opponent. That's what was at stake on Sunday. And West Virginia, despite a lot of pitchers being used, does just that, walking off with a home run by Reed Chumley, 11-10, the final.
I'm going to put an asterisk on this one because...
The stat or the accomplishment or what?
The accomplishment, because is UCF a ranked team in your eyes?
Yeah, I think so.
They seem to be getting a lot of love both from the algorithms and from coaches, pollers in general. But after three games, to me, I mean, UCF... If I were to be a betting man, UCF's probably not a ranked team at the end of the year. They're 8-10 in Big 12 play, which is a drastic difference from their +8 or 9 games over .500 overall record. Kind of a difficult team to gauge with it being the first year in a new conference.
Can I play devil's advocate with you?
Absolutely, that's why we're here.
So Friday night, they put up 5 runs on 7 hits and 4 1/3 innings on Aiden Major, who has been struggling recently. I'll give you that, but is undoubtedly West Virginia's second best starting pitcher, and that's not close. On Saturday, they make Derek Clark sweat early in that game. They take a lead, ultimately score 5 runs on 6 hits against Derek Clark, who, as we've mentioned, is one of, if not the best pitcher in the Big 12. And then on Sunday, they put up 10 runs against West Virginia's bullpen, a lot of that coming early, but they did score late and had some chances there. So they put up, 21 combined runs on a decent pitching staff, I think an improving pitching staff in West Virginia. End up losing three games by, 4 runs on the road.
Yeah,
I know that's obviously not what you want to see out of a ranked team. I would say a lot of ranked teams maybe take one of these games, but I think that's maybe UCF catching a West Virginia team that's smoldering right now at the wrong time.
Yeah, and I'm potentially being a prisoner of the moment just off the eye test and everything anecdotal, because also I'm thinking about how I didn't think UCF's pitching played that well this weekend, and I think they entered this series with the number one. 2 team ERA in the conference. So could have been a bump in the road for them. They also did not field well. I've kind of made that point a couple of times now, but 3 errors in game 2 on Saturday, an error in game 1 on Friday, and that one error pretty much cost them the game. Margins are razor thin, and when you compare them to the league-leading West Virginia, I mean, it does make a lot of sense, but I don't know. I think everyone's got a similar feeling that this leaderboard is going to be shaken up quite a bit by the time the conference season's over.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of teams that have been moving up and down the rankings just nationally. You think Wake Forest entered the year, I think, as the unanimous number one team. They were down, I believe, into the low teens, if not the 20s, at one point here in the very recent past, and there have been other teams that have been moving up and down the national rankings. So not just UCF, and who knows, speaking of the rankings, does this series vault West Virginia into the national conversation? We'll see on Monday, but certainly that's something I think for fans and us as well to keep an eye on Monday, come the start of a new week, is West Virginia a team that is now not only on the national rankings consideration, but a 16 host situation. It has West Virginia played itself into that mark just yet? We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be kind of taboo. It would have been taboo to mention any time before this weekend, but I think after 2 consecutive Big 12 series sweeps, it's appropriate to talk about that now. Sure. But we'll check that out when the rankings come out next week.
Let's get back to Sunday, though. So West Virginia wins 11-10 on Sunday. Certainly some adversity the Mountaineers faced early on. Robbie Porco, West Virginia's starting pitcher, does not make it out of the first inning. 4 runs are allowed in the first. Now, to West Virginia's credit, they give him 3 runs, him and the pitching staff, 3 runs right back as Kyle West homers once again here as of late. He's really, as we mentioned earlier, really hot at the plate right now. Kyle West homering in the first inning. Then UCF extends the lead in the second. West Virginia, on the strength of J.J. Weatherholt's second home run in as many days, cuts the lead and actually ties the game on that home run. That was a 2-run shot to left field in the second, and that was right after UCF starter had been knocked out of the ballgame. UCF then scores 4 runs in the third inning to take what at the time kind of felt like a commanding lead based on how West Virginia's bullpen was already getting taxed. But thank goodness for Derek Clark, as you mentioned and alluded to earlier. If Derek Clark doesn't go the distance on Saturday, West Virginia doesn't have the arms, and Randy Mazey can't press all the buttons that he pressed here on Sunday. Eventually, West Virginia cuts into the deficit. A double by Logan Sauve drives in a couple there in the third inning. That was a bases-clearing double by Logan. And then West Virginia, we kind of alluded to this earlier, ties the game in the ninth inning thanks to great plate appearances in a row by Reed Chumley, unfortunately getting hit in the face, and that comes up later. He gets hit in the nose, pitch just kind of grazes him. So that puts him on first base to load the bases. Kyle West draws a full count, bases loaded walk to get West Virginia back to within 1. The very next hitter, Grant Hussey, does the exact same thing, draws a bases loaded full count walk to put in the tying run. And that's how we go to extras on Sunday. And eventually, a couple innings later in the 11th, Reed Chumley hits a monstrous, just no doubt home run over the left field fence, his 10th of the season. And that's a walk-off winner for the Mountaineers, 11-10 the final. It was a slow-paced game. 13 combined pitchers used, a lot of pitches thrown. I haven't counted that number yet, but certainly an entertaining ball game, Kevin, but the resiliency of this team for West Virginia is something that continues to come up, and we just continue to see throughout the series and throughout this season.
Yes, they erased a 4-0 deficit. They erased a 5-3 deficit, a 9-5 deficit, and a 10-8 deficit all on Sunday. So, I mean, and like you mentioned, that third inning, that big third inning from UCF was pretty morale-killing. Mm-hmm. Ninth inning, though, down 2, J.J. Weatherholt in the top of the lineup leading it off, and he gets out. So that's funny how baseball works. Then you end up loading the bases. Kyle West and Grant Hussey, those two walks you just mentioned. Kyle, if you're not familiar, Kyle West and Grant Hussey, outside of definitely Reed Chumley, are the two biggest swingers on the team.
Yeah.
The two home run, they're not home run or bust, but they're close to it. Two guys that hover around 250, 260 batting average. They strike out a lot. And so with the game on the line, potential to play hero, potential to get this place rocking, they draw walks. I think that that's incredibly mature of them. Two veteran players, full count. I mean, Grant Hussey had to foul a couple balls off with two strikes. The way that they were able to do what's best for the team in that moment, not be too selfish and swing out of their shoes and potentially whiff, that's the stuff that you see in May and June. And when things are going crazy, when almost 4,000 people are going nuts and the pitcher's sweating on the mound, sometimes you just have to be the bigger man and be patient. And that's exactly what they did today.
Those three guys you mentioned, Kyle West, Reed Chumley, and Grant Hussey, two of which drew big-time walks there in the ninth inning. West Virginia's three leaders in strikeouts at the plate. The poise that they showed late in the ballgame, you mentioned Chumley being a big swinger. He certainly showed that in the 11th. But those two specifically of Kyle West and Grant Hussey to stay poised, foul off a couple pitches, get into good hitters' counts, and then ultimately draw huge, momentous, important walks, it can't be understated what that means. And again, maybe that's making a lot out of one game, one plate appearance, but as you mentioned, those are at bats that I think maybe you call back on in May and June when you're trying to win an even more important ball game.
Yeah, I mean, we can pin down points in any ball game, and that can be an excuse used by coaches in a loss or something. Oh, we lost this in the third just as much we did in the ninth. But I mean, when you've got bases loaded, two outs, full count, in an 80% capacity stadium on a Sunday and a beautiful day, if you can calm your heart rate in those situations, you're going to be a lot more successful than if you can in the third inning of a random game.
Certainly a big series win, series sweep, and seven now Big 12 conference wins in a row for West Virginia, tying a program record since moving to the Big 12 conference, of course. We're going to hear from the skipper, Randy Mazey, and also Sunday's hero, Reed Chumley, in just a moment. Stick with us. This is the Golden Blue Nation podcast.
Despite the ill-fated efforts of President Biden and his wealthy New York friends, West Virginia coal is thriving and being shipped to 45 countries worldwide. Given its high quality and clean burning properties, countries across the globe are demanding and consuming it, and in-state production continues to grow. With billions of dollars of recent investment in West Virginia mining operations, combined with the reliability of our coal-fired electric manufacturing facilities, West Virginia coal is here to stay. No other fuel in the world matches West Virginia coal for base load generation and steel making. Like a good friend, it's always been and always will be there, keeping the lights on and contributing greatly to our growing economy. In fact, coal continues to sustain 50,000 plus West Virginia jobs, putting food on the table for Mountain State families. Visit friendsofcoal.org to learn more. A message from the Friends of Coal.
Here's WVU skipper Randy Mazey and Sunday's hero Reed Chumley speaking after Sunday's victory over number 17 UCF on the victory itself and the importance of sweeping the nationally ranked Knights.
With Derek yesterday and Reed today, are you now the biggest transfer portal advocate in the country?
I think I was before that. I'm not the biggest advocate for the transfer portal, but since it is what it is, you need to win it. And we've been winning the transfer portal. And you win the portal, you win the games. So not a fan of it, but since it exists, we're going to win it.
Coach, what did you say about the resiliency of this team? Down four runs, just kept battling to come back into this game.
Well, you know, I mean, we've been through it. There's nobody out there that's been through what we've been through. And then when we didn't score, we scored two in the bottom of the ninth, and when we didn't win it, bases loaded and one out. All of a sudden, you tied the game, but they have the momentum because the game you thought was just about over, and they're back in it, and wind blowing out. They could easily thrown a run up there because that kind of deflates you a little bit when you don't win the game there. But for our guys to battle back and win it after that happened, and I just told them, I was like, been saying all year over the course of a long season, you're going to play all different kind of games. this is our first walk-off. We've been walked off a couple times, and when that happened at Stetson and Charlotte, we said, hey, don't worry about it, man. Our walk-off's coming. Happened to be at a really good time when you're in first place in the league. So, but, you know, we'll see what Hageman's deal is. It looks like we're going to be without him for a while, and that's not anything we're unaccustomed to around here, is being without one of our best guys. So we'll just see how that plays out.
A series sweep like this, what does that mean for you all, especially to stay atop the Big 12?
You know, this league is so crazy. You know, it's nice to have a cushion. You know, we're fighting for first place, but anything can happen on any weekend. You never know what can happen when you go on the road. A cushion is really, really nice. And it would be nice if other people would help us. Yeah. You know? But yeah, I mean, here we are on what, April 14th or 15th, and first place in the Big 12. Who would have thought? You know, we lost going into the season when they said we lost our Friday pitcher, our Saturday pitcher, three outfielders, and you would have thought, you know, people thought this was a rebuilding year. You don't rebuild anymore in the portal. You just put your head down and grind and replace.
Shit, that was your first walk-off homer?
Yeah, that was my first ever. That was my first ever. That was pretty cool.
What's that feeling like?
Blissful. You know, like, you work for that moment. There's, like, no words to describe it. It's just pure joy, honestly. You know, you don't feel excited. You don't feel like, oh, I got to do something else. You know, it's just, like, in the moment, and, you know, the game's over. I don't even know what to think. I thought it was just, you know, it's just it was – really, really cool deal.
So at the plate in that situation, are you just thinking getting on board? Are you thinking about something to drive? What's your approach there?
No, I wasn't thinking anything. Honestly, I wanted to go up and just put together a good at bat. Another thing I tell myself is be on time with the pitcher's best fastball. I believe that guy was in 93, 95 with a good slider. I check swung on before. And then he also had a good changeup. All three pitches were good for him. He just so happened to hang a changeup that I just saw pop up whenever I made my move to the ball. So
back here on the Gold and Blue Nation podcast, Ryan Decker, Kevin Redfern, here at the Kendrick Family Ballpark, Wagner Field, Monongalia County Sports Complex, whatever you want to call it. A great ballpark here in Granville, West Virginia. Kevin, West Virginia, 11-4 in Big 12 play, now 22-13 overall this season. WVU still sitting atop the Big 12 conference, despite, while we were recording this podcast, Oklahoma winning also in walk-off fashion on this Sunday against Kansas State. So Oklahoma also 11-4 in Big 12 play, but by virtue of that road series victory that West Virginia picked up last month, West Virginia on top of the Big 12 standings, 11-4 are WVU and Oklahoma. Oklahoma State also winning on this Sunday, so the Cowboys 10-5. Those are your top three teams in the Big 12. Not sure if we've mentioned this a couple weeks ago, Kevin, when we were really looking at this, or not sure if we mentioned this last week or not, but I think it's worth noting regardless, the way the Big 12 Conference Tournament is formatted this year, 10 of the 13 teams will play in Arlington, there at the home park of the Texas Rangers. The top two seeds, which right now, if the season would end, would be West Virginia and Oklahoma. They get a first-round bye, so you take that Tuesday off. The next 3rd through 10th place teams, they play on the opening day of the tournament. That's Tuesday this year. 11 through 13 are left at home. Right now, those bottom couple of teams are TCU still. Now, that might not be 100% accurate after today. We'll get you updated rankings when we can and standings. TCU as of right now, BYU and Houston. One of those teams, certainly not one in TCU you expected to be on the outside looking in of the Big 12 Conference Tournament in the middle part of April. But West Virginia still, middle part of April, and the driver's seat of the Big 12 Conference, and certainly in line to potentially won another Big 12 regular season championship. The new pad or the new sticker just went out on the outfield wall this weekend, and a good reminder, maybe some serendipity there of when that goes up.
Right, and unfortunately enough for WVU, a back-to-back series sweeps should be distancing yourself at the top of the leaderboard. Unfortunately, Oklahoma's won three in a row. Oklahoma State has won four in a row. And you've got the little old Baylor Bears marching up the Big 12 standings. Five consecutive wins, 8-7. I'm not sure if that's of yet yesterday or today, but 8-7 in the Big 12. I mean, there's a lot of teams that are getting red hot right now. So as much as these sweeps have been huge and have, you know, catapulted West Virginia to a podium spot right here, they're by no means sitting pretty. There's a lot of things that could go wrong.
So to update you on Baylor specifically, Baylor did lose on this Sunday to Texas. So Texas improves to 10-6 in conference play. Baylor now dropping to 8-8 in conference play. But still, as you're mentioning there, Baylor, a team that many people projected to be in the bottom four or five of this conference by year's end, right there in the thick of things right now, which is not something people expected. And then you've got Texas Tech and TCU. They played a really important series this weekend. I believe that was in Fort Worth that those two were playing. That was a big series between those two, but West Virginia in the driver's seat, which again, I think it's hard to overstate this, and we spoke about this with Randy and with Reed Chumley after the game as well. When you lose your best player four games into a series, into the season, I should say, Logan Salve also goes down around the same time. Grant Hussey's missed time. Various guys throughout the order of missed time. Oh, by the way, Derek Clark, who might be Big 12 Pitcher of the Week once again this week, he misses the first several weeks of the season. He's still getting maybe warmed up at this point. We'll see what happens with him. Other guys have been in and out of the pitching rotation. For West Virginia to be in this spot, you can't overstate how good of a job Randy Mazey and this coaching staff have done and how impressively the players have handled this as well.
Mm-hmm. And we've beat the dead horse on it, but I think this a lot of this centers around having stability on Saturday and essentially getting a guaranteed wall-to-wall start from Derek Clark, because that's not going to happen every week. It might not happen one more time this season after it's happened four seasons in a row. So Aiden Major's games have been strong on Friday. Odds point towards a win more than they do a loss. Saturday, it recently has been almost a guaranteed win. When those things aren't the case, what's going to happen? And I think we're going to get a look at that. I don't know, Texas Tech next week, that kind of a middle of the pack to top of the pack Big 12 team who historically mashes. Mm-hmm. And the wind has been howling out here at Kendrick Family Ballpark. So that's going to be a tough one. They faced a lot of adversity this year in terms of injuries, some hiccups in midweeks, and that where those circumstances may have changed, they're going to hit some speed bumps in some other ways. I can almost guarantee it.
So you alluded to the upcoming weekend series against Texas Tech. That's the next Big 12 opponent that West Virginia will face. Texas Tech, by the way, dropping that weekend series this weekend to TCU, losing the last two after winning the series opener on Friday night. But before that, before West Virginia makes the trip to Lubbock, Texas to face the Red Raiders, WVU will welcome in the Pitt Panthers to town. That's a 6:30 start on Tuesday. The Backyard Brawl returns to Wagner Field at Kendrick Family Ballpark. That will be a big one. And just to kind of wrap up this conversation here, we were talking in the press box earlier today. West Virginia's normal midweek starter, Gavin Van Kempen, because of how well and how long he threw Sunday, maybe not penciled in or set in stone that we will see him on Tuesday night here at the ballpark. It'll be interesting to see how Randy Mazey and company go about handling your bullpen on Tuesday, given how much that bullpen will be needed over the weekend. Because if there's one thing we know, and I believe you alluded to this as well, Texas Tech can score in bunches at any given moment. That's one thing you know about that Texas Tech program. They can score in bunches, and bullpen will be key, especially if Derek Clark maybe can't go the full nine this weekend.
Right. And I wouldn't be surprised if Gavin Van Kempen does make an appearance on Tuesday, but if it does, it's probably only going to be an inning. Probably anything more than that would be tough. He's gone now over three innings twice in the last, what, 5 days, 6 days? So pitch count's getting up for him in terms of a seven-day span. I don't think we saw a ton of Carson Estridge this weekend, and he's been pitching very good. Definitely saw him at some point, but he's a guy with starting experience, at least from last year, who I would not be surprised if Mazey rode that hot hand. And then Max Yale, Max Yale, yeah. I'm not sure if he made an appearance this weekend whatsoever.
We didn't see him on Sunday, that's for sure. Obviously, didn't see anyone out of the bullpen on Saturday, and no Max Yale this weekend, so he could be a viable option.
I'm not sure if they would, if Mazie would go for Yale for the start, because that seems like it'd be a little unfamiliar territory. But yeah, this is just going to be a question that we're debating every Tuesday/Wednesday and every Sunday, and it might not get figured out before Big 12 play, before potential NCAA tournament play. It might not get figured. Might be the reason they lose and the season ends. So it's going to be a continuous topic of debate.
Yeah, we will see. That's a 6:30 start time here at the ballpark on Tuesday between West Virginia and the Pitt Panthers. The Panthers playing Duke this weekend. Duke's been a nationally ranked team throughout much of this season. So the Panthers coming in well tested. Only a couple wins in ACC play thus far this year, but that was a team that got off to a really good start, did Pitt, and they've cooled off here a little bit, I believe. And West Virginia now, again, 7 straight Big 12 wins in a row. They've struggled a little bit at times in the midweek, but certainly there will be no question as to whether or not they will be up and ready for the Pitt Panthers to come into town on Tuesday night. But that's going to do it for us here at the ballpark in this latest edition of the Gold and Blue Nation podcast. If you missed anything from this weekend, head to goldandbluenation.com for any recaps, any post-game press conference and media availabilities that we had from the ballpark this weekend. It's all right there, and certainly any football or basketball or any other sport coverage you could want or desire. It's right there as well, goldandbluenation.com. But so for Kevin Redfern, I'm Ryan Decker. This has been the Gold and Blue Nation podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.